This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The OLCC bans caffeinated alcohol drinks. A beekeeper is shot by his bear booby trap. And the Portland Fire Marshal urges that you fry your turkey safely.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, hey, heed! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, November 22nd, 2010. Oregon is cracking down on so-called blackout-in-a-can drinks. During a special session on Saturday, the commission unanimously voted to ban the sales of seven products containing both alcohol and caffeine. Those drinks include Four Loko, which is said to contain the equivalent of several cans of beer, and a cup of coffee, which is a completely different set of numbers than we've heard previously. I like, though, that
I thought it was a six-pack of beer and a pot of coffee.
They just went several. They decided not
Many.
To even wrestle with it.
Multiple. Numerous. Lots.
They are banned as of right now from the importation, distribution, and the sale of, and the sale is the key in the state of Oregon, said OLCC Chairman Philip Lang.
They're not just banned on, they're hella banned.
They're hella banned. The move came out, there's a big red stamp that they put on it.
Hella banned!
The move came after a half dozen college students were rushed to the hospital after downing alcoholic energy drinks.
I'm going to start a group called Hella Banned. All right, I'm sorry.
This is why, though, one of those moments when I wish I could be on, like, the city council or something, so I could just say that things are hella banned.
Yeah, and you with a huge stamp,
yeah.
You know, that just says, get out.
So the products are now banned in a handful of states, including, and unsurprisingly, Oregon.
Does that mean that my Four Loko is now a collector's item?
It is.
Well, now I don't want to open it.
It's contraband, Rick Emerson.
Ah, yes. What about Four Loko that you already possess?
Well, I think it's okay because it says they're banned right now from importation, distribution, and sale. So as long as you don't sell it to someone else.
Or
give it away. We couldn't give it away as a prize, for example, because that would be distribution.
Now, what about when you say importation? This sounds like a dumb thing. But is that like...
I mean, you can't get that Mexican Four Loko with the real sugar.
Well, you can't, I couldn't just get a case or a crate of it delivered, but I could go somewhere else and bring it here in my car, couldn't I? Like, if I just stuck it in my car and brought it, you know, across the border? Like, if I went to California and bought it and stuck it, you know, and just had it in my trunk and brought it to Oregon?
I don't know.
What if I were to open some Four Loko and pour it into a glass and hand it to you? Have I distributed Four Loko? I wonder what the legal definition of distribution is. I wonder about this. Is it the have they banned caffeinated alcoholic beverages or alcoholic caffeinated beverages, or have they just banned these brands? What if I started a brand new brand?
Well, it says that they've banned the sales of 7 products containing both alcohol and caffeine. So I guess, you know.
So what if I started a brand new company like Five Loco?
Yeah.
Or Dos Loco.
Emerson's Loco.
Yeah. Or Hellaband. Just with a huge, you know, just a huge no on the front of it. I think that there's a bustling business to be done in rubber stamps that say things other than like first class or breakable or like this side up. One that just says like up yours.
Yeah.
You know? And you just sell it to a guy who runs a sort of roguish kind of company.
Bite me.
Yeah. You just, you know, no effing way. You shame us all. This idea sickens me. You stamp it and send it back.
Well, you know, we are business owners. We could have those either just for our own use, on our own personal correspondence, or we could also, you know, sell them to our loyal customers.
I'm telling you right now, that's if I ever get into a position where I can just do my business behind a rich mahogany or teak desk, you know, maybe a desk that just, you know, is expansive, that takes up 2/3 of the office, and I could just sort of sit there just passing judgment on all who sit before me in a personal, professional way. I'm going to get a stamp, and it's just going to say something like, "This is the worst idea I have ever heard. Remove this from my site immediately." And I'll stamp everything with that and then send it away.
Right.
Destroy this. So absolutely not.
Are you done yet?
Probably not, but that's okay.
47 years ago today, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas. Secret Service agent Clint Hill ran to the presidential limo just seconds too late and says he has no doubt what he would do if given the chance to relive that moment.
Not a question. I'd be taking a bullet for the president and be dead.
Okay.
I was going to say that's morbid, but I guess it's not. I mean, I guess if you're a Secret Service agent, like, that's your gig, right? Like, The deal is, you know, if somebody shoots, like, that's you. You put yourself there.
Clint Hill says his failure to stop the assassination resulted in years of depression and alcoholism.
It seemed like every time I turned around, there was something that reminded me of what had happened. And so I just clammed up and went in my basement with some alcohol and some cigarettes and stayed there for a few years.
I think Clint Hill appears to be a poorly programmed ENIAC computer.
Oh, I feel so bad for him.
Is that his... I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, to skip over the actual meat of the story here.
Well, he's also a gazillion years old, too. I mean,
it sounds like there's some...
He was probably in his 30s when he was guarding the president, and that was 47 years ago.
Sounds like there's some flutter and wow going on in somebody's diction here. That would... you got to imagine, though... You know, all the other Secret Service agents, and, you know, they all know, like, if you're the guy who has the detail to take the bullet for the president, then you're just not able to do it somehow. I think I would imagine everybody knows your name. There's no sort of fuzziness about, well, whose job was that today? Was it Ted? No, it was Clint.
Oh.
Yeah.
That story, why did you give me that? That just makes me sad.
Because it's history, Don. Because news has to be given to the people. The interesting thing about this is that he's despondent over the fact that he himself did not get shot. I mean, that's just a weird... I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just a weird way to look at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an interesting regret to have that you yourself were not pierced by a bullet.
Well, it's kind of his job. I mean, to be the guy who got pierced by the bullet.
I'm just saying my job is to come here and just sort of bump my gums for a while and then go home. My job isn't to, you know... My job isn't to have my sternum pierced by a piece of hot metal.
Yeah, but think how bad you feel sometimes when just, like, a joke doesn't work.
Okay, that's a fair point.
How you will just, like, you know, you will just dwell on that for days.
I stepped on that punchline. I'm worthless.
Yeah.
I don't deserve to live.
Now imagine... If someone died because of that punchline.
Yeah. Okay. No, fair enough. All right. No. You've put it all in perspective now, Don.
There we go.
I was blind, but now I see. All right. You're listening to Legion News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, November 22nd, 2010. Thank you for being here today. If you want to get this program on your mobile device, you can do that at mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm, or as a direct MP3 download later on today here, or legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes and so forth. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy comes up slightly after 1 o'clock today at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
A Eugene middle school teacher has been accused of assaulting women on the University of Oregon campus. Investigators said Nolan Heinz, 26, grabbed one woman and cut her wrist with a key before the victim managed to escape shortly before midnight on Saturday. Then about 40 minutes later, police said Hines pushed another woman into a wall and groped her before she managed to escape. Police were able to track down Hines and arrest him on sex abuse charges. As for his job as a language arts teacher with Kennedy Middle School in Eugene, he has been put on administrative leave during the investigation. School officials said Hines will not be allowed on school grounds until the case is closed. Letters were also sent home with students, making parents aware of the arrest, and counselors were at school to talk with students and staff.
Stories like this are just weird. It's so much creepier than a guy who just comes up and, like, punches you in the face or stabs you or something. You know, like, it's the guy on the bicycle at the Nike place who was just biking by and just grabbing, like, a single buttock on his way, you know, like, on his commute to work. Or that guy, the panty bandit. A couple years ago, the guy that just had, like, sackfuls of underwear. Like, he didn't assault anybody, didn't grow up anybody. I don't even think he'd touch it. It's like he would just go in and steal your underthings. And then they just found him at home just like one of those postal workers that just takes home sacks of mail. Like, he was just sitting at home surrounded by underwear he'd stolen. It's so much more... Or the cutting with a key, which is weird.
Yeah.
It's just so much stranger than just going up and just, like, you know, just giving a guy what for with a, you know, with a blunt object, which at least is sort of understandable.
I'm just always curious when I hear stories like that about what it is that causes someone to just... make that leap from not groping strangers and cutting them with keys to, like, this is the day that I've just had enough. I just can't keep it under control anymore. And I'm just going to grab random women and grope them.
They just wake up, every, you know, one morning and they've just had enough.
How long he's been walking around, like, just barely containing this desire to just grab somebody randomly. And today was the day that it was like, nope. Can't do it. I can't hold it back anymore.
The day my reign of groping terror begins. That's the day that he breaks out the grope rubber stamp in his head. Groped. Not just groped, Don. Hella groped.
Hella groped.
You know, here's the thing about hella. I say that, and it's almost without exception, I say hella, and people sort of are like, well, they'll look askance at me. They arch an eyebrow. So that word just fell into disfavor at some point, and I don't understand why.
It was cool for about 5 minutes, and then it immediately became irritating, and no one wanted to hear it anymore.
I've kept using it the whole time.
I think it's been out of popular usage for just long enough now that it can be returned in sort of as double funny.
I'm just saying, you know, it's just like every, you know, like I secretly called him Prince the whole time. I've been saying hella the whole time. I'm not ashamed of that. And something's got to replace the resurgence of rad. That's got to be gotten rid of.
Really? So people have been saying rad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, people say rad. So I'm just saying hella, the new rad.
I would be happy to see hella replace totes. Every time someone says or writes totes instead of totally, I just want to go get them and punch them in the face repeatedly.
The next time somebody says totes, you should take out one of their eyes with a melon baller. Okay. Maybe the last time they do that, believe you me, they'd think about things, you know, twice or thrice before they did that again. And let them know why you're doing it. Go, this isn't like a random melon balling that you're getting right here. There's a reason for this, friend.
This is for totes.
And then hang a sign to, this is for totes. Like suddenly you've entered an S.E. Hinton novel. Jesus.
Pony Boy and I say, you got this coming.
Okay. Well, never mind. Here's Dodd Taylor.
A beekeeper in Loveland, Colorado, is recovering after he accidentally shot himself with a booby-trap shotgun in a box. John Frost was shot... John Frost was...
It's the worst gift ever. What's this? It's a booby-trap shotgun in a box. Kids love it, or not.
John Frost was shot in the hand and leg November 4th, according to an incident report filed by the Larimer County Sheriff's Deputy. Frost told investigators a bear had knocked over his beehive the day before and ate some of his honey. Frost said he was cleaning his gun in case the bear came back. A deputy
You're making this up, or he's making this up. Well, none of this is true.
Well, what happened is a deputy at Frost's home said he found a suspicious-looking box with what appeared to be a tripwire near the beehive. The deputy said it appeared that that he set up a trap so that the bear would trip the wire and the device would go off firing the shotgun. The Division of Wildlife is investigating the shooting, but decided not to press charges.
So this is like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon as done by the Jigsaw Killer, basically. That's sort of what this is, where it's like a box with a stick and it says free Roadrunner seed or something.
Yeah, except that honey with an arrow. Honey here.
Except it, H-U-N-N-Y.
Right.
except there's also like a shotgun and a guy going, live or die, or you know, something. All right. But then he is hoist by his own petard.
Exactly.
He nails himself with... I love the idea that he's... That he's, was it when he was cleaning the gun, or had he actually set up the trap? Because here's how I picture it. I picture him setting up the whole trap where he's got like an elaborate series of wires and boxes and guns and things pointing at it, and like, you know, and the sign that says like "Free food this way, bear" or something, B-E-R, and then he turns around and on the way out of the room goes, "Well, I guess I'll leave," and then just right into the forgetting that it's there.
Yeah, because that's the thing. He told the sheriff's deputy, "Oh, I was cleaning my gun," and it actually went off. And the sheriff's deputy said, "Well, what's this box with the tripwire by the beehive then?" And he said, "Nothing." And then he was caught.
That guy in a production of One Little Indian is Don Taylor.
An annual holiday spending survey finds Americans plan to spend more this holiday season than last year.
Well done.
But not by much.
Uh-huh.
Mike Schenck of the Credit Union National Association isn't shocked considering the state of the job market.
And also that people are dumb.
In the face of that, it's very, very difficult to come up with a scenario where the average consumer goes out and spends robustly.
But they're spending more. That's the definite. Okay, fine.
Schenck of the Credit Union National Association says many respondents claim their financial situation hasn't changed from 2009.
Consumers tell us that they're planning to spend more, but just slightly more than they did last year.
He also says 57% of people plan to spend as much or more than they did in 2009.
Bottom line, economic uncertainty, weak labor markets, and heavy debt loads will have consumers spending very, very cautiously.
And by cautiously, we apparently mean more than last year. Okay.
I always hear these stories. I heard these same stories last year, and I had exactly the same reaction last year that I have this year. One is, yes, I understand that that a healthy Christmas shopping season will be good for our economy as a whole. But on the other hand, I think if you don't have any money, don't go spend a whole lot of money on Christmas presents.
That's crazy talk,
you
Don.
Idiots.
Well, that's the thing is I understand that sort of in theory that the idea of the injection of capital into our economy is a good thing. And, the business of America's business or whatever, except and I only have like the vaguest understanding of this in some ways. Like you see those Alan Greenspan guys and they're talking about finances in a way. It's like when you hear Stephen Hawking talking about black holes and like wormholes and dark matter and whatever. And you realize that they just get it on a whole level that you will never grasp it on. But the thing is, it's not real money. Like injecting money into the economy is a good thing, but everybody just buys stuff on credit, which sort of by definition doesn't exist, especially because X number of those people then default on the payments and they never actually cough up the money anyway. So then it's a whole artificial inflation, of the economy, which then just implodes because there's like nothing to support it. I just love the idea though that like 57% or people or whatever are just feeling cautious. And so as a result, they'll just buy more. And you know that people who buy more this year than last year aren't doing it because they have some master plan that it's going to fix the economy. It's just because there's something that's slightly larger and shinier than the thing they already have. And so they have to buy it.
And also there's just this incredible societal pressure to buy people Christmas presents. And, I think everybody knows that the economy blows.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that everybody else is struggling. No one is going to think less of you as a person or think that you're somehow failing as an American if you say, I'm not buying Christmas presents for everybody. I'm getting a couple of things for my kid and everybody else, here, have a loaf of pumpkin bread. Get off my lawn.
And here's the thing is I have been preparing myself. I've been unintentionally training for this my entire life by just being a jackass and not really ever giving presents. I just stopped. Like when I was, I think maybe the first year or two that I was out on my own as an adult, I was, I was thinking like, well, I guess that I'm an adult. I guess I buy presents for everybody I know. I guess that's how you do this. And then I did it for a couple of years and then I just realized, well, this is dumb. And I didn't have the money to do it. And I realized that it was just costing me more. And I didn't want to go into, I didn't want to go in the hole with it. And so I just stopped. And so I think that people, probably the people around me are just acclimated to not receiving anything from me. So I have nothing to live up to.
I make cookies. I make cookies and I get these tins. I go to the Goodwills and I buy the cookie tins that people for some reason give to Goodwill, which I don't know why, but good for me. And I recover them and I fill them with cookies. And that's mostly because, A, I really like baking cookies at Christmas time. It's more for me, really. because it's just like, you know, get a fire in the fireplace, play the Christmas songs, I'm baking the cookies, everything smells like baked cookies. It's awesome. And then I give them to people and they go, yay, cookies. And that's it. That's all anybody gets, cookies.
Is this why yesterday you were talking about having to find like tin, like butter cookie tins at Goodwill?
Yes.
Here's the thing. That's really great, but it's also a little window into what you're going to be like when you're 70. Where you're just going to like, you're going to be the crazy lady who it just like boxes up stuff from around your house, like, you know. Just like literally just like Jell-O out of the fridge. You just dump it into a box and wrap it up and, you know.
Here's a half a bottle of cologne I didn't use. I put a ribbon on it.
What's this leaky box from Crazy Aunt Dawn? Just put it in the closet. We'll dispose of it later. You know, it'll somebody open it. It should be like a dead raccoon inside for no reason. All right. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Well, speaking of the holiday seasons, with Thanksgiving right around the corner... Which actually, it's not really a right around a corner.
There's no corner.
It's a kind of a straight line, really, at this point. Yeah. The Oregon State Fire Marshal has advised the public to use extreme caution while cooking, especially those who decide to deep fry their turkeys.
Be hella cautious.
He does not recommend the use of deep fat turkey fryers, but said if people choose to use that method, they should always do it outdoors, a safe distance from buildings and any other flammable material, and never leave it unattended. He added, hot oil is extremely dangerous. So never use turkey fryers on a wooden deck or in your garage.
Wow.
Fryers should always be placed on a flat, stable surface and should never be overfilled with cooking oil. Burners should be turned off when the oil has reached the proper temperature, and turkeys should only be inserted when they are completely thawed.
Do not submerge face in deep fryer.
Hot oil can splatter and may boil over the sides of the fire. Children should be kept away from giant hot oil deep turkey fryers.
It's like when I was taking the kitchen safety quiz or whatever when I was, I don't know, I worked in a lot of restaurants when I was growing up, and they would, you know, like, if you wanted to move up from, like, dishwasher to, I don't know, like, the guy who, like, cut the heads off of prawns or something, like, you would have to, like, you'd have to take this quiz, and it was just, and it was all, you know, and there's, like, deep fryers in the kitchen, you know, you have to deep fry potatoes for some, you know, do you or do you not hurl the potatoes into the deep fryer from a distance of 6 inches, you know, and it was like,
Is it okay to clean the giant meat slicer while it's running?
And you almost just wanted to dispatch with the test to just figure, like, that'll sort itself out. You know, you come back in like a year and all, you know, society will be a lot smarter because everybody else will have just sort of just taken themselves out with the trash. All right. Well, do you have to buy like a, you don't have to buy like a special deep fryer just for the turkey, do you?
Well, they have these big giant deep fryers and you can use them for like crab boils and things like that. But yeah, no, it's a special thing. It's got a propane tank and it's a big, super deep thing and it takes gallons and gallons and gallons of oil.
I guess if you weren't a restaurant, you probably wouldn't own one of those unless you were doing like a lot of like, you know, yeah, like huge stuff or whatever. No. So,
and you know something?
I can see somebody doing it on a wood deck, though. I really can. I can just totally see some Bocephus guy out there.
Every year after. Yeah. This will be part of our fun. In the days following Thanksgiving is when we get to read the stories about the people who burned their house down because of their turkey fryer.
Well, and here's the thing. And as soon as Thanksgiving is over, then we roll out. Then we begin over in the Rick Emerson show. We begin Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas, which is just like an endless parade of maimings and fires, which is just, you know. And so, yeah, and it begins with some guy out there just saying, well, no, it looks fine. Fire it up. I think the only time we've ever done that, we did the deep fried turkey. We actually did it like in a parking lot, and it was specifically because it was concrete, and like even if it tipped over, you know, it would run out of the cup, but it wasn't going to splatter or something. You're not going to put it in a stool in the middle of the kitchen or something. Which somebody did, by the way, when I was living in Spokane. There was a guy who was deep frying a turkey, and he had balanced the whole thing on I swear to God, like a wooden stool in the middle of the kitchen.
Yeah.
Not like a table or a sawhorse or whatever, like, you know, but like actually like a barber's, you know, not even a barber's stool, but like a stool you got from Sears for $5. Yeah. You know, just in the middle of his kitchen.
And there's always the person, like they said, to make sure the turkey is thawed, there's always the person who takes, like, the partially or fully frozen turkey, which is frozen.
Right.
And then drops it into the super hot oil. And then the whole thing just, like, erupts like a volcano
over
their arms.
Oh, because there's steam.
Yeah.
I guess, and it goes, I guess it's because it's all trying to, the steam and the water, they're all trying to escape at once out of the hot oil.
Yeah.
And so when they escape, they take the hot oil with them right onto your flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. It's going to be the most glorious holiday season ever. And so forth. Also on the list of things not to do is, you know, don't decide that you're the guy who's going to, like, you know, fix the lighting problem or the electrical problem. Just, you know, by just taking a bunch of $1.99 cords that you got in a huge box from Walmart and just stringing them together in some sort of an endless conglomeration of cables until, like, the entire thing is sort of, like, glowing red hot to the touch. And you say, no, it'll be fine. Just don't look at it and don't touch it in any way and avert your eyes. You start pulling, like... And I've had these, by the way. This is a thing, like, in the past. I don't do this now, but, you know, like, everybody has purchased those extension cords where, like, I don't know where they're made. I don't know from where we import them, but it's like they're dirt cheap, and you can just feel the electricity inside trying to get out because they are so poorly insulated because you bought them for, like, $1.05 somewhere.
Yeah, you plug something into it, and, like, 5 seconds later, it's hot to the touch.
It's bubbling, and you just kind of go, I don't know. Do we have a brick or something we can set that on? So don't be that guy.
And then you say, I'm sure it'll be fine, or else they wouldn't have sold it at a store.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was at the dollar store right next to the nachos. Don't be that guy. Don't be the guy that waits until winter has already kicked in. Which, by the way, I mean, I think that, you know, if you are that guy, it may now be too late for you because I don't want to be the guy talking about the weather, but it was officially unpleasantly cold.
Was it hella cold?
It really was. It was like, and I know that, like, everybody's like, well, you should feel what it's like in Fargo or whatever. You know, just because it's colder somewhere else doesn't mean it's not, like, cold here. So just because on Everest or something there's an ice storm happening where it's 500 below doesn't mean that it doesn't feel like somebody punched me when I walked out the front door of my house this morning, which it did. So this is not the time to find out that, like, your electricity isn't working or your heater's not working and you got, like, some whole panel of fuses or something that's going to go out. Or, like, the house you moved into, you know, when they built it, like, before Reconstruction, they didn't really think about all the power you're going to be using when you try to get your Christmas tree and your heating and all that going. So you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or go to squireselectric.com. They do free estimates, no job too small or too large. They've done everything from a single light socket to an entire building to a huge office building that actually they're just finishing a condominium, I think, right now. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, it can make your life easier. So, really, there's probably no good time for this, but this is the worst time to find out that your electrical system is not up to par, or if you are needing to get something to repair, don't put it off. Get it done now. Squires Electric, 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your science on the march for Monday right here at Legion of News.
Other side. When 9-year-old Ming Li lost her left hand after being run over by a tractor in July, Chinese surgeons resorted to grafting the hand onto her right calf because her wrist was so badly damaged for reattachment. Now a hospital spokesperson reports that the delaying action has paid off when surgeons will finally reconnect her hand and arm.
So it's like a placeholder?
Yes. In fact, hopefully it's there. I uploaded a photo to... rickemerson.com/pictures. So if anyone wants to go there and see, there's a picture of the girl with the hand attached to her leg. More surgeries are scheduled for the future to improve Lee's hand function and reduce scarring, but the physicians at the hospital in Zhengzhou in the Henan province, I can say Henan, but I can't say province. Jeez. Appeared to have pulled off a minor miracle. Gizmodo picked up on the original report and said, "The procedure may seem more unorthodox than even double hand transplants, but at least the girl's getting her own hand back, and she might even recover more use of it in the future." So she lost her hand after being run over by a tractor, and to save the hand, they grafted it onto her calf.
They should have a service where if you're like some guy that just has a stump, like you can lease the hand for a while. Like, you got to give it back eventually. But it's like, though, like, you know, if you're some guy that just, you know, hand ends in a wrist or whatever, that you can have the hand for a couple months, you know, and you, like, you prorate it out.
So if you were, like, a tissue match, you would just basically be babysitting the hand until the person was ready for it.
It's like house sitting or something, you know?
Then there'd be all these lawsuits, though, where people would
they get attached
sue.
To the hand. So to speak.
So to speak.
All right. So it was just I'm going to the side here, but it's the intertron is functioning slowly. So was it just sticking out?
No.
Was it sticking out like a Howie Mandel glove or something or?
Kind of. You can see that everything's all bandaged up, but it's been sewn. It was sewn on to like the lower part of her calf down by her ankle. So her hand is actually down kind of by where her foot
Ooh,
is.
Wow. Ooh, that's creepy. I mean, I guess it's great and all, but still, ooh, wow, that's creepy. Jesus, okay. Well, fair enough.
It's time for the annual news story about how pumpkin pie will give you a boner. In a study of men...
Is that what the story actually says, the clinical term?
No, I rewrote the first line.
It's hard to imagine Walter Cronkite really... And it's boner time again for everybody who's having pie.
In a study of men ages 18 to 64, 40 aromas were tested to determine which arouses men the most. The smell of pumpkin pie topped ladies' fragrances. The number one odor that enhanced penile blood flow was a combination of lavender and pumpkin pie, according to Dr. Ellen Hirsch, director of Chicago's Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Center. Hirsch said the combination increased penile blood flow by an average of 40% in participants. Pumpkin pie was the single strongest stimulant. He said maybe the odors acted to reduce anxiety. By reducing anxiety, it acted to remove inhibitions. However, eating part of the pumpkin, usually discarded when making pie, could offer even greater sexual health benefits. Palm Beach Gardens alternative medicine expert Dr. Ralph Montserrat says the most important element of the pumpkin are the seeds themselves, and he recommends that patients with erectile dysfunction eat pumpkin seeds because they're very rich in zinc.
Is this like one of those things where they talk about, where like, I don't know, like if chicks want to have a perfume that is, you know, that the guys are into, it should smell like pencil shavings or something? Or
vanilla,
like you hear that every now and
vanilla
again.
Vanilla and cinnamon are supposed to be like really appealing to men. And I'm assuming the cinnamon stuff and probably the vanilla is part of the pumpkin pie thing.
You should bring this story back next hour, because then I have a question I'm going to ask you about your sense of smell.
Oh, yeah. Here, and it does say that the same study showed that older men showed a strong response to vanilla. But they did say that the men with the most satisfying sex lives responded strongly to things like strawberry stuff. And they said that the thing about men is every odor we tested aroused the participants.
Yeah, I think it was less to do with the odor and more to do with just men in general.
Yeah, it had to do with, you know, which had the stronger responses than others. But apparently everything turns guys on.
By the way, can I just say this? Speaking of vanilla, like many men, I'm surrounded by things from Bath & Body Works, like, constantly. It just sort of appears all the time. Let me just tell you that Bath & Body Works, I don't mean any disrespect to the people who work at that company, they make the most repellent scent and I don't mean like in general, I mean specifically, they make the single worst smelling, and I guess you could say like a rendering plant smells worse, but nobody expects that to, like, you don't dab that behind your ears. Of all the things that are supposed to smell good, Bath & Body Works, they make the worst, it's called warm vanilla sugar.
Oh, God.
It's the worst scent I have ever, it's awful, it's horrible.
Anything they make with vanilla, the horrible artificial vanilla smell scent that they use is just vile. I used to work with a woman who used one of their vanilla hand lotions, and it would just waft out of her office
down the hall.
And it's gag-inducing.
That is one of the few times, and it's not like I don't think I actually put my foot down, but I think that was one of the few times where I actually just said, I came just this short of an edict where I just said, like, we can't have this around. This is awful. It's every now and again, and here's another thing. There's one perfume, and I don't know what it is, because it's always awkward. There's no way to ask this socially without looking like a jackass. But there is some perfume, and it must be notable or popular or something, because I smell it, you know, I would say a few times a year. Be in an elevator, or you just pass someone in the hallway, and there's like a scent, and it's obviously a perfume, and it's just vile. It's just rank, and it's the same one every time. I don't know what it is, but it's some widely used scent, and it's just terrible. And it makes you wonder if, like, it's just me. Like, is it just my nose somehow? But, like, with the vanilla thing, like, you're saying it's the same thing. You think it's horrible, and it really is.
And I actually use a few products from Bath & Body Works, so I'm not ragging on them as a whole.
It's just that one scent.
That one, and I have some, I have a couple of different perfume oils, and I have, like, a French perfume in a spray bottle, an eau de toilette, that use amber. And I love the smell of amber, genuine amber. The amber, artificial amber scent that they use at Bath & Body Works, same thing. It's just hideous.
Right.
It's just like you take the cap off of it and smell it and just go, oh,
well, that's probably,
oh, God, what are they thinking?
It's because they've synthesized it, right? Because it's not real.
Right.
And so as a result, you know, you get the fake thing and it just smells terrible. I myself am a fan of, I believe it is called Kitchen Herb, which it is a series. It's like a thyme and dill, I think, which sounds weird, like a thing you don't want on your hand, but it actually is, it's quite good. That's that is my preferred soap scent from Bath & Body Works.
I use their soaps. I use a nutmeg kitchen soap in my bathroom, actually, and And I have a couple of things. Midnight pomegranate as a scent I'm fond of.
I'm just saying.
But, you know, but the vanilla and the amber.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, no, just avoid.
That's All Right, Mama by Arthur Big Boy Crudup is the world's oldest rock and roll song, according to Southeastern Louisiana University rock historian Joseph Burns, who also thinks that this song could contain the first ever guitar solo break. Burns hosts the weekly radio program Rock School and gives Crudup a nod because That's All Right, Mama was the first song to contain all of the elements that he says are associated with rock and roll.
What year would this have been?
The song, it was 1946.
Okay.
And I said, it's music that draws heavily from blues and country in a hit form that's often danceable. There should be hints of jazz, gospel, or folk influence, and there should also be some technology influence.
Is this the same That's All Right, Mama that Elvis Presley then?
Yes.
That's all right, Mama, that's all right, yeah.
The song came out in September 1946 as a rockabilly piece with a blues melody line over the top, and it became one of Elvis's first singles later. Candidates he and others considered for the honor included How High the Moon by Les Paul and Mary Ford, The Honey Dripper by Joe Liggins, Boogie Chillin' by John Lee Hooker, Saturday Night Fish Fry by Louis Jordan, The Fat Man by Fats Domino. Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and the Comets, and Rocket 88 by Jackie Brunston and his Delta Cats.
See, that was the one that I always heard. I always heard that Rocket 88 was the which I believe was written by our friend Ike Turner. That's the thing you always hear referenced as being the very first rock and roll song. But I don't really. As long as it's nothing by Elvis, as long as Elvis continues to be denied, that's all that matters to me.
And apparently, it's interesting. The term rock and roll started as a nautical phrase, meaning the movement of the boat up and down and back and forth. In the late 1800s and 1900s, gospel and jubilee music co-opted the term and used it to mean being rocked and rolled in the arms of the Lord. The first recorded use of the term in a song was Camp Meeting Jubilee in 1916.
Now, that is an entirely different version of the story than I've heard, because I was to understand that rock and roll was to mean the sex without benefit of marriage. Well, that it was to be getting it on.
Well, rock historian Joseph Burns.
Well, that makes it much less interesting.
Says differently.
Seriously, you can't have a song, you can't have a genre based on a nautical term. That's just dumb. That's just silly. There's nothing. Look, here's the thing. There's nothing rocking about nautical terms. It's like you can't just throw down some. Here's a song about rowing crew. You know, it doesn't really. You know,
plus sailors were pretty. Raunchy, hard-living guys.
Pirates were raunchy, hard-living guys. That's not really the same thing. This is sailing. This isn't like a specific kind of sailing, you know, but
well,
the plundering kind
though,
of pillaging.
Were...
I mean, this could be some dick in a, you know, in a cardigan at Harvard, you know, just sitting there just like rowing a shell. I mean, F that guy. I'm sorry. I got all angry about something totally different from the story there.
Yes, you did. Okay. Conjoined four-year-old twins have stunned medical experts after they discovered that the little girls could hear each other's thoughts and see through each other's eyes.
Go ahead.
Tashiana and Krista Hogan from Canada have separate bodies but share the same brain, and it was their mother who found they share thoughts and sight. When they were playing, one of the girls will reach over and grab something from her sister's side and know exactly where it is without possibly being able to see it, said her mother.
You're creeping me out. How old are these girls?
Four.
Can they talk?
I don't know.
Because I would want to know. Like, I'm not saying the mom is making it up, but don't you want to...
Neurologists have looked at them since birth and have backed up the extraordinary finding. Their neurosurgeon, Doug Cochran, says the twins are sharing signals from the other twin's visual field. One twin may see what the other does as the brain of one of the girls receives electronic impulses from the retina of the opposite twin.
Oh, this is creeping me out. I don't know why that's freaking me out so badly. Well, here's the reason I want to know how old they are, because I want to know if they can talk. Because if you're sharing a brain, if you got two heads but one brain, it seems like you wouldn't be able to talk, or you'd... I don't even know what it seems like. It seems like you'd either be able to speak really well or really badly. Because how would you even figure out what thought, like, in other words, if the thought starts in your head, you know, if the speech starts in your brain and then it ends in your mouth, like I think, you know, I need to use the bathroom, and then I say, pardon me, sir, donde es el baño? So basically my mouth is this is not obviously how it happens in a real scientific way, but your mouth is basically reaching into your head, finding the thoughts, bringing them out, and then speaking them. But if you're if you're sharing your thoughts with somebody else, it's like reaching into somebody else's sock drawer looking for your argyles.
And what happens when you say, "I need to go to the bathroom," and then you have to go
waffle iron?
No, that wasn't really me. That was the other brain.
Yeah, or just, but you just end up, you know, like it's half your thoughts and half hers, you know, where you just say, you know, like, "I need to go to the spokes." And it doesn't make any sense at all, you know. And it's just complete gibberish. It's freaking me out. That story unnerves me.
Home gardeners often you're twitching.
I am literally trying to shake the story off. It's unsettling me.
Home gardeners often struggle to prevent deer from eating prized roses and other plants. So how do commercial Christmas tree growers keep the hungry deer at bay? Well, do you know Rick Emerson?
An army of cyborgs.
That would be awesome.
The Living Dead.
Well, North Carolina State
guns, lots of guns.
University Extension researchers have recently come up with some creative, natural, and cost-effective solutions. The scientists, led by Christmas tree production specialist Jeff Owen, are exploring the use of inexpensive, inedible food byproducts, such as dried blood and egg powder, typically sold in bulk to the pet food industry to be used for flavoring. These byproducts cost 85 to 90% less than their commercial counterparts and are found to be just as effective. Using these repellents, which can be purchased locally in bulk, may provide tree farmers an early Christmas present. Owen explained, "These products have an unappealing taste, but the decaying smell actually elicits a fear response in the deer and keeps them away from the crops."
I don't get it. They put it on the tree, or they sprinkle it around or something?
They're sprinkling it around the tree and probably possibly spraying it on the tree.
Oh, so it just sounds so it's like the opposite of catnip.
Yeah. We're continuing to look at similar products like liver powder and fish meal to
liver
see if they
powder.
Work the same way.
It sounds like one of those things they'd sell in a Sears Roebuck at, like, you know, the turn of the century because it's, you know, because it balances the bodily's humors.
I like the idea of the dried blood, though.
Yeah.
That deer going, a yummy treat. Ah! Dried blood.
I wonder where you get that from.
They said it's sold as flavoring components to the food industry.
Okay. Think about that the next time you have some Tic Tacs.
The pet food industry.
Says you.
The products will add to a growing list of more well-known natural repellents, such as human hair clippings, cayenne pepper, and raw eggs. Owen said Christmas tree farms in North Carolina have long dealt with deer that harm the trees by horning them, which is thrashing market-sized trees with their antlers to mark their territory, and browsing, which is when they eat the buds and shoots off the young trees. Commercial deer repellents cost at least $18 per pound, while the dried blood or egg powder, which can be bought in bulk from agriculture suppliers, runs less than $2 per pound.
I totally want to call up some company and just order hundreds of pounds of dried blood and hair, you know? Look, can I get a crate of hair clippings and 3 bags of dried blood? That'd be fantastic.
Oh, do you have a tree farm?
Yeah.
No,
just you know, just a half, you know.
Am I supposed to?
And then just, you know, and then just sort of, and then just leave it sitting open in the living room when people come over for, you know, for dinner or something. Just have a big box of hair that you've ordered from some. What's that? Oh, it's a box of hair. It just arrived.
So if you buy the dried blood, can you reconstitute it with water and then use it to, like, write satanic messages on the wall? Or something? Or whatever
when
you would
say
use.
You don't really mean
one.
Me. You know, you mean
could
you? Could someone similar to but legally distinct from you do this? It's funny that you actually went the satanic message route. I was thinking, could you use it as some sort of a DNA marker? Could you use it to create stem cells? Could you use it for a transfusion? And you had to go right to the occult marking on a home above a bassinet, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Theoretically speaking, hey, are they remaking Rosemary's Baby?
I hope not. Probably.
All right. Well, in an even.
As long as it's not Robert Zemeckis.
This is actually a good time, speaking of Christmas trees. Less about the dried blood, more about the Christmas trees. This is a good time to welcome a brand new business partner to Legion of News. And before I say anything else, I'm going to give you a website to go to. And it's just as it sounds. It is Christmas, and then it's spelled all the way out, ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And Christmas Mountain Trees, a third generation family farm, and it's a full time farm. Let me ask you this, Dawn.
Okay.
If I were to ask you, at a Christmas tree farm, how many trees would you imagine they have there?
More than six.
And you can see this, by the way, if you go there and you look at ChristmasMountainTrees.com, you can see because the farm is, I mean, it's massive. First of all, I mean, when you think of farm, because it's like, you know, Here's the thing. When you picture your Christmas experience, when you picture, you know, in your mind's eye, that you, when you imagine, your Christmas, the whole month of December is you're having, you're going to see the lights, or you're going, caroling, or you have your parties you're going to. The Christmas experience in your imagination, you don't see yourself standing in line on a street corner, choking exhaust and looking at a selection of 15 trees that some guy named Maury is like trying to unload, by the end of the week. The Christmas you picture in your head, the one that you've seen, like in the paintings, perhaps on the tin that you put your butter cookies in, in your Rankin Bass holiday special. And that's where you just see, the huge snow-covered mountains, and it's the crisp, clean air, and it's you're going on like a sleigh ride, or you're doing like, you're riding on a tractor deep into the woods to find the tree of your dreams, and then you're dragging it, and you're taking it home, and you're wrapping it up, and you're bringing it in.
I have trouble seeing you do that.
No.
In my head.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. When you look at this website and you see it's at ChristmasMountainTrees.com and you will actually see the farm, there are, I swear to God, 85,000 trees there.
Is that the actual number? Did they tell you it's 85,000?
They have actually an estimate. They have a way to figure that out. And it's the number of acres times the number of trees in an acre, which is, the number of trees like within a...
So that's not hyperbole. There are actually 85,000
No. I asked the guy.
Trees.
I made him clarify that, and he actually said, it may be more. But there are, there are nearly 100,000 trees at ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And the great thing is it's a family farm, and it actually has, there's this whole story, which we will talk about at some other point, that it goes back to the 40s, where the grandfather actually would go up to Mount Hood, and he would cut the trees down by hand with one of those Rocky Balboa in Rocky IV training sequence saws. And he would cut it down, and he would bring them, and he would sell them in Portland. And then eventually it started, just growing into a bigger business every year. And so they have a family farm, and that's what they do year-round. I mean, it's not just some guy that just goes and schleps a bunch of trees into the back of his truck, and then he's trying to pitch them to you downtown, or something. You go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com, and you find out more about this, where it is it's an entire experience. You go up with your family, and they can actually, take you around, and you can look from section to section, and from there, you can see Mount Rainier, you can see Mount Adams, you can see Mount St. Helens from there, because it's high up, on a mountain where the trees are it just seems endless. It's like they go all the way to the horizon. And you can make it an entire day's experience where you go there with your family, you're going to find the tree, and once you find the tree that you want, they'll actually take it, they'll cut it down, they'll shake the loose needles off, and then they'll actually do something called baling. And I didn't know what this was called. But baling is the thing where they actually will wind the twine around it in such a way so that once you get it home and you put it in your living room, you just pull the twine off and it kind of goes, and it just immediately pops into place. Like all the branches come down.
Like the opposite of the Grinch stealing the tree.
It's exactly what it is. That is exactly what occurred to me. It's so bizarre, and yet not that you say that. That is exactly how it occurred to me. And, so if you really want to go and you want to cut it down yourself, and if you want to, feel the pioneer spirit of taking the tree and cutting it down and putting it on your car yourself, you can do that. Otherwise, you can actually just go up with your family, and again, you can actually ride through just these huge, huge stands of trees that go on forever. You sit there, you got your hot chocolate, you got your hot cider, your coffee, they serve that. You find the tree, you say, that is the tree for us right there. And they've got trees there that have been, they've been growing for 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 years. I mean, it's not like, you're not going to end up with like Charlie Brown's Christmas branch or something. And you pick out the tree, and then you go back, you have yourself some more cider, the guy's taking the needles off, he's wrapping it, they fasten it to your vehicle, you go home, you're good to go. So it is one of those rare occasions where you can actually, take the experience that is in your head and you can make it real. You find out by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. That is the website, just like it sounds. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. They open Friday, November 26th. That, of course, the day is the day after Thanksgiving. Friday, November 26th at 10 a.m. And their regular hours are Wednesday through Friday, 10 to 4:30. Saturday, Sunday, 9 to 4:30. All the way up until December 19th. So find out more by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It is the Christmas experience as we all picture it made real. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A Delta Airlines passenger jet was delayed for several hours at Los Angeles International Airport on Sunday because the cockpit door was locked and the pilot and crew couldn't get inside. According to passengers aboard Delta Flight 124 from LAX to Atlanta, the jet was scheduled to leave at 9 a.m. However, the flight was delayed nearly 4 hours as mechanics worked on the cockpit door. Delta Airlines spokeswoman Kristen Bauer said Sunday night that the Boeing 767 was brought to the gate but from a remote location. It was then discovered that the cockpit door was locked, she said. A maintenance worker was brought in to unlock the door. What isn't clear is why it took more than 3 hours to unlock it. Once the cockpit door was unlocked, the flight left the terminal at 12:43 p.m., 3 hours and 43 minutes late.
Is this one of those things where the passengers are just sitting on there, just staring out the window, wondering why the hell they picked this particular flight?
Probably.
Yeah.
It was scheduled to land in Atlanta at 4:20 p.m. and then continue on to Brussels. According to the Delta website, Flight 124 landed in Atlanta at 7:36 p.m.
Okay. Is Brussels in France?
Brussels is in Belgium.
Okay.
In a statement on Sunday, TSA Chief John Pistoli promised what?
Nothing. You just said the, and then you stopped, and then you went on to a completely different sentence there.
Yeah.
Okay. It was like a spare piece of refrigerator magnet poetry just fell out of your head.
My conjoined twin was thinking about something, and I picked up the thoughts from her
that
brain.
That story freaks me out. I want to know if there's video of that. I want to know if you can... Oh, are we done with science here?
Oh, yeah. Let's be done with science.
I want to know if there's actual, like, video footage of just, you know, of one of them trying to order lunch, and the other one just keeps thinking about, like, radial tires.
I'm going to save all the TSA stuff for later. We need to get to entertainment.
We've got eight
news.
TSA cuts, by the way, including one, I swear to Christ, in which the guy, John Pistoli, who's, I don't know, he's one of the heads or the spokesperson for the TSA, I swear to God, the lead into the story is actually, he explains why they need to put their hands down your pants.
Oh, good.
That's actually the lead up to the cut. I tried to listen to the cut as like little as possible as I was editing it down, because I want to be surprised at the same time everybody else is. Like, I want to find out concurrent with everybody else why exactly the hand in the pants, other than the fact that it's fun, apparently.
If we can get some of the music that they use, like, in the background for old public service films about washing your hands and things like that, and put it behind him telling us why it's okay to put...
Sort of a Donna Reed kind of a...
Yeah, that would be really nice.
I'll look into it.
Print media may be a lost cause, but newspapers aren't. At least that's what media mogul Rupert Murdoch is betting with the launch of The Daily, an iPad-only daily newspaper that's set to launch from News Corp's Manhattan offices sometime next month. Murdoch has already snapped up some big hires to fill the 100-person editorial staff. Page Six's Richard Johnson and New Yorker music critic Sasha Ferrer Jones included, and plans to create an enclave outside the web or print. But while an iPad-only paper could get readers to pay for content in a way that the web doesn't, unlike the internet, the iPad is a commercial environment, New York Times media critic David Carr is skeptical about the Daily's chances of saving the industry. He says, as innovative as it seems, The Daily will be a newspaper, an ancient motif on a modern device. It will have a standalone opinion section, published at night and not linked to outside sources. With this in mind, Carr says, it seems sensible to wonder who's going to bring old habits to a new environment.
Yes. Yes, it's a commercial medium unlike the internet. Let's remind you, the Rick Emerson radio program can be heard for just 32 cents a day, a little bit after 1 o'clock today and every weekday right here on the internet. You can hear that over at rickemerson.com. It is rickemerson.com. Today we got Snuffwatch, really?
We do have a Snuffwatch.
Is it somebody I know? I mean, not like intimately, probably.
I think you will be familiar with who this is, I believe.
Male or female?
Female.
Okay. Snuffwatch coming up today.
Also a Geekwatch.
Geekwatch coming up today. Snuffwatch, do we have a winner in the Dawn Taylor's ringtone contest?
We do indeed.
All right, so we'll announce the winner of Dawn Taylor's ringtone contest. We'll talk about last night's Boardwalk Empire. We'll talk about Walking Dead, which I actually started last night, finished this morning, which is a really unnerving way to begin my day.
I haven't seen Walking Dead yet. You're going to have to talk about it without me.
You shouldn't talk about Walking Dead in that voice. It creeps me out.
Okay.
I haven't seen Walking Dead.
Brains.
Okay. It was disturbing. I mean, it's not like that show's ever just a walk in the park or something, but I mean, it was unsettling in just the deepest way. I mean, it was like conjoined twin unsettling. So we got that so forth. You were listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm.
Entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday.
Actress Lindsay Lohan has been dropped from the upcoming Linda Lovelace biopic Inferno, according to a rep for the film's director, Matthew Wilder. Lohan, 24, was set to star as the infamous porn star, but the part is now being recast. Wilder said the production team has been waiting for Lohan to complete her rehab, but several issues, including difficulty insuring her, has forced them to pick someone else. Lohan is currently being treated at the Betty Ford Clinic. Superior Court Judge Eldon S. Fox sent Lohan back to rehab last month, after she failed a drug test in connection with a DUI-related arrest 3 years ago.
You know, it's weird to think that they do have to insure people and that... Because you like to, you know, you just think that everybody in Hollywood is just gacked to the gills on drugs all the time. But that there are companies that just, if they think that you're just some raging cokehead or something, that they just won't hire you. Not because they really care, but because they just can't, like, if you drop dead or you go into some sort of, like, drug-induced homicidal rage, that they're on the hook for that. I think that was always the rumor about Aaron Sorkin, is that's why they couldn't get the Farnsworth invention made into a movie. That's why they ended up doing it as a play, because he's just a writer, but it's not like he's even on the set every day. Yeah. Like, he's just the guy that puts the words on the page and then he hands it off. And they couldn't get insurance.
Yeah, it's especially difficult with actors, because you get an actor, and actor's like actually, you know, in the movie.
Right.
So you're investing, like, you know, $100 million in a film, and this person, like, just, you know, goes on some kind of, like, a naked rampage through downtown Austin, Texas, you know, in the middle of the movie and gets arrested. It's like, well, there you go.
Which does happen every now and again.
Yes.
Or if you're, you know, yeah.
Justin Bieber was named Artist of the Year at the 38th Annual American Music Awards Sunday at the Nokia Theater in Los Angeles. The 16-year-old teen heartthrob won over Eminem, Key Dollar Sign Ha.
I believe it's Kesha.
Okay. Dollar sign, huh? Lady Gaga and Katy Perry for the show's top honor. Bieber won 4 statues for every category in which he was nominated.
Okay. Here's the reason I like that. The reason that this Justin Bieber story makes me happy, did you say four statues, like one for each category? Like,
yes.
Four in every category somehow?
No, one for every category in which he was nominated.
Okay, because that would be like a hella win there. But he got the four... Which is what? Artist of the Year, and then probably Record or Song of the Year.
Favorite Pop Rock Album, Breakthrough Artist, and Favorite Male Pop Artist.
Here's the reason that's great, is because I like things that irritate dudes who hang out on music message boards. That's just because you can go by probably like right now, and you can just see, you know, just threads erupting by the thousands about how music was like way better when they were growing up, and how this is another sign that everything today sucks and everything was better then.
Eminem was robbed.
Yeah, no, but it wouldn't be Eminem though. It'd be like whatever Steely Dan put out last year.
Well, after he won Favorite Pop Rock Male, beating out Eminem and Usher, he spoke to the crowd courtesy of ABC.
This is Bieber.
Bieber.
This is possible because, you know, I've been singing Eminem since I was, you know, 3. And, you know, Usher is my mentor, you know. So this is big.
He kind of creeps me out.
Yeah.
He's like that Haley Joel Osment kid. He just seems preternaturally sort of balanced and possessed, you know, for, you know, self-possessed and self, you know, he just doesn't seem nuts the way that I undoubtedly would be if you just handed all that fame and whatever to me when I was that age.
Yeah, but you know, I'd
be dead.
He's 16. He looks like he's 12. He's hanging out with Usher and wearing leather jackets. I mean, he is on the Macaulay Culkin roller coaster. You just know it.
Maybe. Who's to say? I mean, it's like if they had... Because he's been famous. It's not like it just happened yesterday. I mean, he's been famous for a couple years now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the thing?
And I mean, you know, Justin Timberlake turned out okay, so it's not all bad.
I suppose. I mean, look, I don't begrudge him. I'm just saying, like, if you handed that, if you handed that ring of fame keys to me, or to you, probably...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you would have been dead within a week.
Well, just in the same way that you get a certain kind of gleeful joy out of stories of, you know, political misconduct.
Yes.
I love hearing when fresh-faced teen heartthrobs become, like, coke-addled nightmares.
Well, it's probably on the way.
I just enjoy that.
Yeah. Check back in a couple years.
A Florida dance troupe en route to an appearance on BET's live 106th and Park show caused a terror scare when they ditched their cars in the Lincoln Tunnel and tried to run to the Manhattan studio. Unfortunately for the dancers, the costumes they chose for the performance were guerrilla-style camouflage. The group, which goes by the name Club Envy, drove for 24 hours from Jacksonville, Florida for their chance at stardom, but ran into bumper-to-bumper traffic in the last half hour as they neared the toll plaza in New Jersey.
Oh, wow, and coming from Florida, too.
With the adult chaperones staying in the cars, the five young women and three young men decided there was only one thing to do to make it on time: run the remaining 2 miles through the Lincoln Tunnel. The troupe raced past the tolls and incredulous commuters and into the tunnel. They might have made it on time, but they were stopped at gunpoint by a contingent of officers from the Port Authority Police and the FBI NYPD Joint Terror.
I hope they were, like, giving the Black Power salute the entire time they ran, too.
The tunnel was closed for 45 minutes on Wednesday as authorities tried to sort out the situation, finally ending up deciding to escort the dancers to the show. But the producers were forced to turn them away as they missed their time slot.
That is awesome. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up a little bit after 1 o'clock today following a brief musical interlude. Today, Geek Watch, Snuff Watch, Boardwalk Empire. I, Rick Emerson, will speak about Walking Dead a little bit, and we'll have the result of Don Taylor's ringtone contest. Legion of News brought to you today and every day by a series of fine business partners, including Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them by going to Portland Spanish. PortlandSpanish.com. You know, the only thing worse than running from Florida all the way into the tunnel. Was this in Jersey or New York?
New Jersey.
Okay, so running it. See, and it's like in New Jersey, they're just... You got to figure in New Jersey, something bad is always happening, like, all the time. You know, like, at any point, it doesn't matter, day or night, there's just something horrible happening somewhere. And so they're just keyed up for that, like, constantly. You don't want to add a language barrier to that, do you, Dawn?
God, no.
So I'm just saying, you're going to be traveling, you're going to be somewhere, perhaps, you're going to be better served by speaking Spanish. You don't want to wait. You want to learn that now. And you want to learn it in a way that it's going to stick with you. You're going to be retaining it. You're actually going to be able to use it conversationally. Find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That's where you find out more information about Castalia Language Center. They offer Spanish language classes for adults in small class sizes, which means you and how many of your peers?
Ocho.
No.
Siete.
Sure.
Siete
seven?
E uno is ocho. Siete is seven.
Dawn is not yet a graduate, by the way, just in case you're...
I can say those words. I'm just bad at math.
It's not like you're the after picture or anything for Castalia Language Center. Find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. They teach Spanish language classes to adults, which means you learn at the same way and the same rate as everybody else in the class, and you get near individual attention, and they'll also be able to find something that works with your schedule, the day of the week and the day of the time of the day that works best for you, and making it mesh with all of your other obligations in your very busy life. You can find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com, and it's Castalia Language Center, PortlandSpanish.com. With that, we will bring to a close another exciting episode of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up next at RickEmerson.com. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, but I have Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another installment of Legion of News. Until then, have a satisfying Monday, won't you please?